Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Good evening, and welcome to a wonderful, wonderful show. I'm your host, Candy, a.k.a. Single Mama Diva, and here at Life Support Radio, we like to talk about a variety of things, but most of them have to do with spiritual things that we deal with on a daily basis. I have had a few conversations with some friends of mine and found that there was really a need to explore the realm of sexuality on a deeper level, on a level of spirit. I've always looked at sex as a spiritual thing, but a lot of people just kind of look at it as recreational. And so I've invited a couple of people on the panel today that are going to discuss the benefits of looking at sexuality from a different perspective. And one of them, Dora, we've had conversations. I know her well, and she's a spiritual coach. And I ran across a gentleman, and his name is Michael. I'm going to let him formally introduce himself because I always feel like that people can introduce themselves better than other people can to some degree. But he is a renowned spiritual teacher and healer as well, and he's the author of a book that talks about sacred sexuality. And when I saw his website, I invited him to join in on this conversation. So I'm going to let Dora come on and Michael come on, and they're going to tell you a little bit about what they do and introduce themselves. Hello.
Hey. Hi, Dora.
Hi. Hi, how are you? Is this Michael?
Good. Yes, it is.
Hi, Michael. How are you? I'm glad to have you on the show today.
Thanks, hon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so can you just tell our listeners a little bit about what you do and your work, and how has it been beneficial to you as well as those that you've come in contact with?
Well, I've been teaching, you know, for about 30 years, you know, as the show is already probably posted, you know, my name's Michael Mirdad. A lot of folks know me for spiritual work. I do healing work. I'm, you know, pretty renowned as a healer and counselor as well. So I do a lot of things. But sacred sexuality, to me, is a part of sacred living, as I say. So sacred sexuality is one aspect. Everything is supposed to be treated sacredly. I don't try to, it's kind of a funny place for me to fit in, because when I go and speak at tantra conferences or sacred sexuality conferences, or even as an author of these topics, some folks think I'm a spokesperson for that, and then they think I make that more special than something else out in the world. And I just say, look, relationships, work, sexuality, parenting, cooking, really, everything needs to be treated with a greater spiritual presence, and it just happens to be a topic because of the misunderstanding around the topic and the misuse of the topic, and because as a counselor and a healer, quite honestly, you know, folks, there's just so much sexual abuse and misuse that I, you know, it ended up being one of the books I've written. You know, I think I'm probably most known for my book, You're Not Going Crazy, You're Just Waking Up, because I'm known for spiritual work and teaching people how to wake up from hurts and wounds and life itself. But the topic of sacred sexuality was just a necessity. And so I wrote a manual, a book called Sacred Sexuality, A Manual for Living Bliss, and it was meant to be sort of an overall, a great manual for people into Tantra or Taoist work or any other form of sexuality. And I tried to cover just about everything so that I could sort of just retire from that type of writing, just one book, get it out there, and let it serve everybody for whatever they were looking for on the topic. And it went so well and people were so interested that I ended up writing a second book that included less techniques and exercises and just really more the spiritual philosophical side of it. And that one is actually sold even more. So that one's a really popular book. That's the one called An Introduction to Tantra and Sacred Sexuality. So, you know, I came into it, strangely enough, in two ways. One, because I was teaching on so many topics anyway, and everything just does tie together, as you know. And secondly, because of the amount of work I do as a healer and counselor, the topic of misuse or abuse around sexuality, it's just that being so out there, high in numbers, that kind of drew it. I just did a workshop in, I think it was Fort Worth, Texas last weekend, and it was a healing workshop. And I was brought into a center that's a very popular healing center, an acupuncture center there. So I went and presented to it was great, a sold-out audience. And we did our my workshop, but I started it, and somewhere in the workshop I asked everybody to, close their eyes so nobody would know. It was kept in private. And I said, okay, everybody's eyes are closed. Raise your hand if you've had some form of sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. Now, when they were done, I had them lower their hands, and when I said, you can open our eyes, I told them. About three-quarters of the people in the room had their hands up. It just shocked everybody in the room because people were, you're kidding. Now, I'm not saying that's the ratio across, the nation or planet Earth,
right.
But it shouldn't be anywhere near that number.
Right.
And so when you go to a healing workshop, it's surprising sometimes to see the ratio, even if it's 1 in 3, let alone this was 3 out of 4, 1 in 3 is just not good, and deserves to be healed and treated appropriately. But on another note, sacred sexuality really, it so much depends whether you're thinking of the tantric perspective, the Taoist perspective. But in a nutshell, it's some people say, well, what is tantra? Isn't that the kind of people where people are having sex for long durations and meditating together? There's different kinds of tantra, but I think of this umbrella, and things fit under that umbrella. Sacred sexuality means that whatever sexuality you're experiencing, whomever it's with, however it is, as long as there is a loving respect between people, because you don't have to be in love with a partner to have a sacred sexual experience. Loving respect is number one. Number two, you really need to have a certain amount of safety. You need to have safety. I don't just mean safe sex. There needs to be I need to be able to trust you, to feel safe with you, so that if I feel a feeling, I can share it. I know what we're here to do. It's this whole feeling of comfort, and then that leads to a level of healthy communication. I need to also be responsible. If I'm going to share with you, I need to be responsible. If there's not responsibility or communication or safety or respect, it isn't sacred. So that's kind of those are the components. There needs to be this love, safety, respect, trust. Those pieces there are what I believe creates what I'm calling a sacred sexual experience. And under that umbrella, yes, some tantra fits and some does not. Because some people are out there practicing tantra, advertising tantra, and all they are is really sex addicts. And they
right.
know nothing about tantra. There's people that talk about sexuality, and there's nothing about sacredness or safety or respect. So you got to be careful. You get a book or a video or whatever, even a website or a teacher or a facilitator or a healer or counselor that uses the word tantra or sacred sexuality, and they're nowhere near my definition. And mine could be different from yours and the next person, but at least I can tell you my definition, and then you can decide if that's the kind of definition you'd like to stick to. Or you might say, well, no, I like somebody else's definition that just says I believe in free sex, because that's what some of it's about. Some people say, well, tantra is really about saying yes to doing whatever you want, wherever you want, with whomever you want. And mind you, I don't judge you for it. If that's what you do, I think that's great for you. It doesn't fit what I'm calling sacred, and I think across the board we need to make the world aware that be aware of what you're getting yourself into, because if you think you're getting into a sacred sexual experience and it kind of goes over the line and you get hurt, it seems to me that you're not really in a sacred experience. And that would mean that if it's not sacred, it's not safe, it's not loving, it's not respectful, then I would call it probably abuse or trauma, you know, so
right.
It doesn't really get us where we wanted to go, right?
Well, I think what inspired this show for me was that I see extreme perspectives when it comes to sexuality. On one hand, you hear a lot of abstinence and only do this if you're married and only do this if you're this or that. And then on the other side, you see the promiscuity of the carelessness and recklessness of sex. And a lot of people use it for escapism. A lot of people use it, I said earlier, for recreation. And the abuse factor that you were speaking of, a lot of people are actually fighting back from their abuse through sex in their adult years, trying to regain that power that they lost through sex. So now you have a lot of manipulation in sex. And then you have religious forces that teach you how to use sex to get a spouse. And you start gambling on the table with sexuality. Well, I'll have sex with you if you marry me. I'll have sex with you if you give me a ring. And it's causing so much confusion. So what I decided to do was ask you and my good friend Dora, which I'm going to allow her to speak a little bit. I know, Michael, you can't really be with us for full 2 hours, which is why I jumped right into the discussion with you, because I really want you to get everything in that you can possibly get in. But I want to take a moment and let Dora introduce herself as well to the listeners, and then we can get some more dialogue, another dimension of dialogue going. So, Dora, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Dora. How are you?
Oh, I am absolutely fabulous. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, well, welcome. Yeah, you know you do what you do, so I'm going to let you speak for a little bit. You can even address some of the things that Michael was talking about. He really just kind of took all the words out of my mouth.
Yes, yes. Everything Michael said. And hi, Michael.
Hello, darling. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I just ditto. totally see it, get it. Mirrors my philosophy and what I do around, I don't think we should kind of box our lives up. As Michael has said, everything should be treated from a spiritual point of view. And when we do that, it's easy to put sexuality in a place that is spiritual, because it's not sitting somewhere else across the room or somewhere else in your life. It's part of your life. So I really do get that. And the accountability you talked about, the respect, the safety, the trust. In coaching, I use the zodiac, astrology, and metaphysical, which is kind of puts it in a nice, just covers the whole spectrum of how we view our lives, that which is spiritual. So it's a good show, and I'm glad to be here. Of course, I work, I coach using metaphysical principles. My journey started a long time ago, almost at birth, and I had questions that I wanted answers, and that led me toward spirituality through the church, past the church, back to the church, then out of the church, and I discovered who I am and why I'm here and what I'm supposed to be doing. And it turns out that I'm just naturally born to do some things, and I like that. And so I developed something called a Divine Birth Blueprint, and it covers a lot of the boundaries that we set for ourselves and the secret that we brought with us to the planet at this time, and it's a secret monad. And once we unlock or go into that room, the closet that we've locked our best in, and get it out, it really does cut the chase, and it puts us, our spiritual growth, in an accelerated pace. And I really do like that. So I'll hold the rest of what I got to say and let Michael have the floor again. And I'm just glad to be here and glad to participate in this show.
Well, thanks, Dora. I wanted to speak to the part that Michael was talking about when he was talking about childhood abuse. And I think that that plays such a huge role in a lot of, and it doesn't have to be as huge as it is, but I think it's huge because a lot of people don't really discuss it. A lot of people don't really talk about it. And it's not something that is pleasant to discuss. So a lot of people act it out. And I've noticed that, fortunate as I have been not to have to work through that, not that I haven't had to work through some things, but I do notice that working through things that happen to you more so as an adult gives you a whole different perspective as opposed to being bothered as a child and having to work through that. And a lot of hang-ups that some of my friends who've been abused may have had, I never really had, and actually was able to experience a lot more sexual freedom and a lot less attached to it. Nothing really, not that I didn't really take it very serious, but I never really used it as a test to see, you know, do you love me, don't you love me, or bargaining chip or anything like that. But I didn't realize that I wasn't doing that until I got a little older and started realizing how complicated some people were making sex. And I'm thinking, okay, it's not anything to be taken lightly. I don't take it lightly, but I don't think that all of the things that we've attached to it is real. I think it's been an illusion has been attached to sex, fantasy, illusion, things that we want it to be. We use sex as a fairy tale land of some kind. Well, I want a Prince Charming, so I'm just going to have sex and maybe he'll appear. Or I want a new car, so I'm going to have sex and maybe it'll come. Or I want freedom from this particular reality. And so, Michael, how do you deal with people who have used sex as a means to create another reality to keep from dealing with their present reality? What types of things come up when you're working with people, and what do you suggest to some of these people that you can share with our listening audience?
Well, some of the things I do, like in private sessions, I would say one of the most important things is not to have any kind of, I don't have any agendas or any judgment about what a person is sharing or what they're saying or about their past or the present or their experiences. It's very important to be very accepting of a person. I've had people that have been abusers and people that have been abused and some that, of course, many that haven't been abused or are just confused or would like to know more, just want information about sacred sexuality. Keeping in mind, I work with so many topics and metaphysics, spirituality, and such that sexuality is only one topic people come to me with, and of those, only a certain number of those have been abused, but the number is fairly large, especially in ratio to people with sexual issues or wanting to learn more or grow more in that subject matter. And so when folks come to me, it's mainly acceptance, really offering a lot of an acceptance so that they feel safe to come forward and talk about what's going on. And fairly quickly, people can share, in my sessions, it seems like, they can share a great abundance of, look, okay, you know, here's what's happened to me. Because they're coming to me for an hour, and I travel so much, they may never see me again. It's 1 hour. I could be in anywhere from Honolulu to Alaska to Australia to England to all over the United States or Canada, they may get one shot. And so for them to sit for an hour and want to keep secrets or be embarrassed is kind of a waste of their time, possibly mine too. So we really have to develop a very loving energy and a trusting energy as immediately as possible. And I don't mean just on this topic, on any topic. As a counselor, as Dora is saying, I'm sure she has the same thing. You know, she would want to establish a connection so that they can share, so that they can get the most out of their session. So, you know, that's kind of where I go, and I agree with what you were saying, that unfortunately a lot of people misuse their sexuality. I try to explain things very intelligently to people, and I use a lot of metaphors, but the bottom line is even people's eating is very rarely out of presence, where you're totally aware of why you're eating and what you're eating. Why you're eating this particular food? Well, it's Monday night. This is what I have every Monday night. Well, that doesn't mean it's coming from presence. That's called habit. Or you can say, well, why are you eating that? Well, I'm feeling kind of sad today. Well, that's called a compulsion. That doesn't mean you're present. That's a compulsion. So there's all this ego eating. Well, it's the same thing with money. Well, I got to go shopping. I'm depressed today. That doesn't mean you're shopping from being really present. You have a compulsion or an addictive behavior. So sexuality is the same. It's folks are not really usually present. Why are we sharing this? And I really would say that the optimal kind of purpose would be, I'm just feeling so abundant in love right now in me, love, just love like spirit, God, joy, that I would love to share that with a person. That person then says they would like to share that as well. What if that person says, no, sorry, I'm not in the mood? You should still be able to maintain that same love, abundance, and joy you were feeling a minute ago. If you crash because your partner says, no, I don't want to share that, then that means you had some agendas and so forth. So I'm saying in a perfect world, we would be filled with this joy and love. It's the same thing that makes you want to smile some days. You can't not smile. Picture a person winning the lottery. How do they not crack a smile? Oh, my God, you know. Well, it's there. It's in the ethers. It's all around you. It's in every cell. You're just overjoyed. Well, that's kind of what we need to have in a perfect world, that is. That if I'm going to share with you intimately, it's not because you asked me to and I don't want to let you down. It's not because I want to because I'm feeling sad or lonely. Or some people even say, you know, anger. It's a way to kind of let go of anger. Well, listen, if you're angry, I don't want you using me sexually to vent that anger. That's kind of ridiculous. So some people say when you're not feeling well, if you have a headache, it's a good headache remedy. This is on some of your popular sex shows. Mm-hmm. You've got to be kidding me. You've got a headache and you want to have me in your body or, you know, whatever it is, kissing and holding intimately so that you can release your headache. You know, it's just kind of silly. I'd rather you take an aspirin, feel better, tell me if you're feeling better, and if you would like to make love, then approach me from love rather than pain or compulsion or addiction. So all over the world we've got people that are, you were saying it yourself, hon, the religions are telling them one thing, their culture is telling them another thing, their parents. I don't want you making love to me out of your parental stuff. I don't want it out of compulsions. I don't want it out of your religion. It's in your heart and soul or it's not. And when you look at nature, nature just follows nature. It's just this loving essence. You know, most animals don't kill for sport. They don't just do things for the heck of it. It's a bigger sense of nature. Well, our nature is greater in the sense that we have free will, but that can be our worst downfall too. Sometimes when it's our will is coming from an ego place. But I really think that love needs to be the primary motivation. And remember, I'm saying love from a respectful love. I don't mean you have to be in love. And I think it's very fortuitous that you yourself experienced a little more freedom and clarity. But most people come from a place of hurt and compulsion, feeling lonely today, or my self-esteem is low, so I'll feel better if you're desiring me. All those kinds of strange things. And they're human. I mean, you know, those are human needs, and I understand them. I'm just saying in a perfect world, we can get to a place where am I coming from? For having food today or sex today or anything we do, even when we parent our children, it really should come from inspiration inside rather than parenting the way your parents parented or to compensate and do the opposite of what your parents did. It really needs to come from a loving inspiration. What is the most loving thing to do right now in my parenting? And sometimes that means saying yes to a kid. Sometimes it means saying no, and you're not worried about what they think of you. You're doing what you know to be the right thing, and that's how we have to also approach, you know, our intimacies. It's is this the right thing in this moment? And I'm not going to let your, you know, your issues dictate whether I decide to be intimate. Because, gosh, I mean, that's the most intimate thing you can do, obviously, is making love. And of all things, we don't want to bring a lot of negative energy into that. But it's quite amazing, the topic, and meeting so many men and women. And, you know, the questions abound as to what's healthy and what's right. And you know, again, just coming from a healthier, loving place is probably the shortest answer I could give on that. But a lot of people will say, is it true that when you're being intimate with somebody that sometimes you're taking on their energy? Well, how could you not, to some degree, be mixing energy? Your auras blend, your energy blends, your, you know, obviously your fluids, your eye gazes, all kinds of things are exchanging energy, chakras, the whole bit. There's an energy exchange. And, you know, when you tell some people that, it's kind of funny to watch their faces wince because they think about some of the people they've been, you know, with, made love to, and they realize, wow, had I known this, I don't think I would have chosen that person. And I think, well, that's a good lesson for us all. You know, think of the big picture. Don't just think of you know, what your needs or neediness or emotions or your physical, chemical needs or whatever are. Come from a place of a little more integrity than that, you know?
Right, and I think that brings me to the point that I was thinking of. When you see people who've just made wrong decisions and they've gotten frustrated in the area of intimacy and they are not finding the relationships that they would like to find, because they may still have some self-work to do usually, and they're still in the preparation stages and may not know it and are reaching out prematurely to people who are reflecting where they are, and they will take a vow of celibacy out of frustration. And it ends up not being a very pleasurable experience, or either it doesn't serve the purpose that it was intended for, which again speaks to being connected and doing everything for the right reason, whether it's you're going to be intimately and physically and spiritually involved with this person, or if you decide to take a vow of celibacy and decide that for some reason or a specific purpose from a conscious place that that's something that you want to do. But I, you know, have noticed, I've, you know, never consciously tried that, but I've noticed the people who've done it from a very frustrated place, that they often pick up other forms of either addictions or other things kind of come up that they're not really prepared to deal with because they're not doing the spiritual work to find out the root cause of their frustrations. And they think it's sex, and it's not necessarily sex. It may be their approach to sex or their hidden agendas to sex. And I'll just wanted to know, Dora, what you thought about that.
Okay, is a question where people use some type of celibacy?
Where people, right, out of frustration.
Out of frustration.
You know, we're talking about, Michael was talking about doing things from a pure place or looking at how the animals do things naturally, how they don't go and kill for sport. They kill because they want to eat. And that brought up a thought with me of how people, when they get frustrated with their relationship and they say, oh, this isn't working, I'm just going to be celibate. I'm not going to even think about sex, have sex, or, you know, and they do it from a very frustrating place, either having sex out of frustration. I know he was talking about people having sex to relieve frustration. I see a lot of people refrain from sex because they think it's going to relieve frustration, and it often does not. And I was just wondering if you had a comment about that.
Yes. When I get a client, and I've had clients, celibacy for them is like a reward, and it's like something they take out a banner and they wear it, and I'm celibate. And I said, well, I don't have anything to give you for choosing celibacy because you're avoiding your life. You're not in the game. and you use an excuse to, this is just an excuse to keep you from engaging and interacting with yourself to develop yourself. So since you've taken yourself out of the sex loop with another being, my next question I'll ask is, well, are you masturbating? And they say, yes. I said, well, then that's not celibate.
That's right.
You know, you're not being celibate if you're masturbating. You might as well go ahead and have a partner. I think it would be much more enjoyable. So you have a, you have something else going on here, and it's called, I need to come back to myself, get to know myself, look at me. And as you said, Candy, so many people have hidden agendas tied to sex, and the childhood would keep coming up. Whatever you thought about sex, the first time you engaged in sex, if you're 50 years old and you have not looked at that again, you're probably having sex like you thought sex should be from a child. I remember I asked one guy once, I said, why are you in such a hurry? He says, I said, well, I can tell you. You think you're still sitting in the living room and your mom is down the hall and you got to get it on quick. You know, you got this pressure, right? So now we can't do anything else because you built up this pressure and the clock is ticking. You think somebody in the back room is going to come and catch you. So you're still being triggered to use your sexual energies like that first time. Whatever that first time was, or that thought around that first time, was it religious? Was it the media? Was it your parents? You need to visit that again and update your idea or your truth around sexuality. And you can put it anywhere you like, but you do need to look at it like an adult. You don't need to be looking at sex like you're 10 years old or 12 and you're 50. You should be, you should be in a hurry now. You should want to slow down. And,
unless you have kids.
Well, you know, then you're parenting. Then I always say there's another dynamics that's going on here when you're parenting and with your children in the house. There's, as Michael said, there's so many ways to look at sexuality and where one is in their life. What is, you know, what are you doing? Are you parenting? Are you in school? There's so much. And then the physical is playing a part in it for women. Are you perimenopause? You know, are you menopause? Or men? Are you andropause? You know, it's got so many pauses going on. But when, but when you take a moment and you get off the beaten path and you look to see who am I, not only in around sex, but who am I when it comes to me?
Right.
And once we get that taken care of, I think sex kind of just takes care of itself. It's really not as big deal that people make it. Now they got it.
It's not.
It's sales now. It's sales. It's a cash crop right now. And it's everywhere. Nudity is everywhere. It's just like, oh, my God, they did. It's a cash crop. And there are a lot of things on the Internet that people take as the gospel around sex. They don't think anything else about it. And I know from experience when females are in perimenopause stage, the hormones are crazy. You really need some help. If you're anywhere between 35 and 55, your libido is off the chain because your hormones they're switching. So you need some help. Get you some real good help. Get you a coach or somebody to help you. Because you find yourself in bed with anyone, and you wake up the next morning, how did I get here? See, the body is doing something. It's asking for attention because you didn't give it any attention before. Now it's kind of out of control, like a misbehaved child. So this is a broad topic.
So what do you tell young people? See, this is the thing today. When I look at media is always really good for throwing a problem out there and marketing a cure.
Mm-hmm.
So now the new market for young kids is acceptance. And we all know you know, all of us that are on the phone this evening, acceptance is really huge for us as far as accepting people where they are. But where do you, right now it just looks like sexuality is being exploited a lot of ways in school systems now, as well as in on television, entertainment. Everything is about entertainment. And the reason why I brought the spiritual aspect to the forefront is because, okay, kids are really, really engaging in sex. It's not, this is not a, this is not hype. This is not media hype that kids are really engaging in sex. I mean, I see the babies just coming from out of, you know, the woodwork. And how do you talk to or counsel kids that are not necessarily kids, but they think they're grown, say 16, 17 years old, they're still in high school? Is there a place for educating them, and we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on it, but because kids are so exposed to sex, what are some of the things besides abstinence? Because telling a kid to abstain who's possibly been having sex since they were maybe about 12 years old, a lot of kids have been experimenting with sex as early as 12, and maybe earlier if they've been sexually abused in any kind of way by an adult as a child. And now we're trying to put this abstinence lid on it. And although it sounds ideal, just like you guys just said, there's a huge spectrum of why people are engaging in sex. So in the best way that you can, what advice do you have for parents who may be raising children that are thinking about sex or already having sex?
Well, I would offer a spiritual perspective and then a material one. Spiritually speaking, the more people, a person or group of people or race, is out of touch with spirit or God or whatever a person wants to call it, then the more empty they're going to feel inside, the more longing and hurt they feel, the sadness on a core soul level, then they're going to use that emptiness and reach and be more vulnerable to being sold on how to fill it. So it all comes back to a spiritual ache that needs to be filled. Not a we eat because we think our stomachs ache for food, and it's really about spirit or God. We think we ache for companionship, and it's really God. So the first problem is a spiritual one, and that's why nobody comes up with the answer, because it's a spiritual problem with where people have to deal with the answer with a seemingly invisible God. They don't know how to do that, so then they start medicating with everything else. And what Dora said, sex sells, and it's a cash crop. So now there's always somebody out there, like the old Pinocchio cartoon where you have the little wolf or whatever, the fox, you know, on the side of the road that's ready to sell Pinocchio anything to get him distracted from becoming a real being. So there's always somebody that's going to tell you, look at the checkout stands of any store. There's always a magazine telling women, particularly women, here's 10 ways to make your husband please you, or to get your partner to please you. Here's 5 ways why reasons you don't have orgasm. It's always telling somebody what they don't have, what they should have, how they could get it. And if you just buy this magazine, of course, then they'll tell you. And the answers are usually pretty horrible. They don't really give you much of anything.
Right.
You know, so to me, it's the internal is the main problem, but externally, it's sex sells. And part of your question about children, of course you can't tell them to be celibate. And if you did, I think they should ask you, okay, were you celibate?
Because
immediately they would just call you on it, because most parents were not celibate through all their years. And I think it's unfair to tell your children to be if you weren't. But what I think is fair is to teach children, not desensitize them, but teach them the truth and the realities of sexuality. Show them nature. Show them trees. Show them how even flowers have their own versions of a penis and vagina, the reproduction. Show them what that is by nature and animals and so forth. it just what a beautiful and very natural and take the steam out of it. Take that hot, heavy petting, you know, whatever, out of it when they're children anyway.
Right.
To show them first the natural piece to it, then I think it's important to teach them self-respect. One of the sayings that I use for any age person is people have to earn the right to touch your body.
Right.
I mean, how does that not translate to 1 + 1 = 2? People have to earn the right to touch your body. I mean, why wouldn't they have to earn? If you really know yourself and you are a spiritual being, you're beautiful, you're radiant, you're more glorious than the greatest nebula in this universe, you're more beautiful, more radiant, a person has to earn the right. They can't just walk by and give you the look and walk that special way and turn you up. If they do, it's no problem, but what it means is that's how empty you are, that you need, the way they walk by just immediately makes you say, oh my God, you know, like the old cartoons when you see the cartoon where somebody bakes a pie and then off comes the character, the cartoon character floating, you know, following the fumes. It's like we do this with each other, like, oh my God, you give me a look. What I teach my students in my sexuality workshops, I say to them, my hope is that you learn so much about yourself and your beauty that when you walk down the street, somebody whistles and says, hey, baby, man, I would do such and such for you, and I could make you feel, I just want you to be able to look at them and say, you have no idea. You know, because it's true. When they
right.
when they offer to give you something, you have no idea. I am part of God, man. I don't need anything. And if I share, I could give you the ride for your life because I'm so in touch with myself. You wouldn't even understand. You wouldn't comprehend what you were feeling if you understood how to make love to love, how to make love to love. And so, you know, I get a little bit, you know, bold about those things because it's, you know, we're so radiant and people underestimate, and then I have to make up for my neediness through you. You know, all the time when I was in high school, I was even into this, you know, this stuff even back then. And one of the things that I used to use as a medium to learn from was the things around me, like music. And you can use the right music or movies to even educate kids and say, here's a good example about love or integrity. And one of the things one of my favorites was the song called Reasons by Earth, Wind, and Fire. And the song very blatantly, very perfectly talks about he's talking about, man, we have all the reasons to have sex the night before. Everything makes sense. I'm feeling hot. You're making me feel good. You're making up for all my woes of life. And you just look at me a certain way. Wow, I'm just feeling great. And he says, but where does all the reasons go the next morning? You know, they're all lies. I mean, he's being, you know, some people might think it's a little harsh, but I love it. I think it's great that he had the courage to sing a song with such boldness to say, what are we doing to each other, man? How can we lie down? I look at you a certain way, and you have such emptiness that my little seductive look suddenly makes you think I'm going to like you if you sleep with me. And tomorrow I mostly won't even want to know who you are. And that's why we use that term hookers, because I'm hooking you. I'm hooking you into thinking that I can give you something that you don't already have, which is a lie. You do have everything you need, but I'm convincing you. And the more I do that, the more I smile at you and give you that little something, the more I have fed your misunderstanding about who you are. And now we're both hooked into the same addiction, you know. So very sad and unfortunate. And, of course, there's the opposite. There's the, like I said, being in a space of love and offering to share that love with another person. I'm not trying to make it all sound horrible, but you're asking about how to share to keep folks and children from getting into that mess. And I think teaching that self-respect of really who we are, you know, and encouraging that direction of people have to earn the right to touch your body because you're a beautiful being. So I don't think we need to tell kids don't ever do it.
Right.
Because they're just going to interpret that as a lie, and then they're just going to have to sneak because they see through your lie without wanting to call you a liar. They're going to have to kind of do their own thing and pretend they're not. And then we have contradictive behavior, and it's just not healthy. Anyway, that's my take.
Very good take. That is. Very good.
Thank you.
Because I find it very difficult I know my mom was very open with us. It's all three girls, and she was extremely open with us about sex. And at the same time, she also let us know that we weren't ready. at a very young, you know, sex is not for children, and this is why. And very much would tell us and talk with us about the rewards and consequences of sex and how, oh, it's a beautiful thing. I'm not going to tell you it's not beautiful. It's wonderful. But these are the responsibilities that come along with it. Are you ready for that responsibility? So I looked at sex as more of a responsibility, more so than I did an act of recreation like a lot of kids did. And so it was my first experience, which I've always been very open about. It was very much on my terms, and I remember when my mom found out about it, and she's a very, very saintly woman, I guess, if you want to call it that. I don't really call it that. She's just a good lady where she makes sure that she is living an example for us as her girls, first and foremost. And even though she had this exemplary example of no sex before marriage and things like that, I was always the one out of both my sisters that said, I don't think I want to wait until I get married, because I just personally felt like I would be kind of blind if I did, and I would, that scared me. It was more afraid for me to go into something not knowing my partner in every aspect than it would be for me to just find out as much as I can about them on an intimate level, physical, spiritual, whatever. And I think what happened is it made me go a lot deeper into myself at a very young age, because she told me so much that I was trying to figure out, okay, it must be a lot to this, and I really need to do some soul searching. Now, it wasn't that much soul searching you can do as a senior in high school, but whatever there was, I thought I was doing it, you know.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful experience. It was not an experimental thing. It was not a I'm going to get back at my mom type thing, or I'm acting out. It was we had known each other for like 3 years, and oh, I'm a senior in high school. I'm grown. I'm grown. We're gonna get married. You know, as off point as I was looking back on it as a 30-year-old, I was still really a far ahead of my peers who were kind of just experimenting and having all kind of heartaches and heartbreaks and things like that. And my mother kept it real with me, and I remember her saying, you're not the only one. And I say that all the time because it just kind of rang with me, and I was like, what do you mean? Well, at this age, young boys are playing. They're experimenting as well, and you may be getting yourself, remember what we talked about? And that was when, you know, sometimes actually doing it, you're able to, your eyes are open, you're able to kind of see. And for me, that was just a better learning experience than for me, per se, than my sisters who were abstinent. And then they got married. And then there was this whole host of sexual issues that they were stuck with that they knew nothing about. By the time I got married, I kind of just knew what I wanted and how I wanted and how I wanted to express myself. And some of that work was done. Now, is that the same in my 20s, in my 30s as it is in my 20s? Of course not. It's totally different. But I was not afraid to explore that. And as a result, I never really had any regrets. And never really had to struggle with, did I do the right thing, like some young kids may have to go through. That's not for everybody. I don't believe in going and spreading that gospel to kids. Oh, go ahead on and try it, or don't try it. But having that open dialogue where kids can feel comfortable, well, why do you want to have sex? Are you in love? Do you feel like it? What is love to you? What are your fears? You know, when you go to bed at night, what are your dreams? What are you acting off of? And getting as close as you possibly can to that subconscious level of the child, assuming that that spiritual foundation is there, because, as you said, that spiritual core is the most important part, because when all is said and done, when that relationship doesn't work out, once you shared yourself physically with someone, and I think that's the biggest lesson is knowing that no one owes you anything. When you talk about looking at nature, well, the animals exist not with the expectation that I'm a bear, this lion owes me something. I'm a gazelle. I'm beautiful. Look at me. I can just prance around here, and this lion is not going to eat me because I'm not bothering him. Well, that's just not how nature works. No animal in nature bargains and says, you owe me. You know, every animal in nature gives according to the ability that God has given them to give, and they survive according to the ability that they have to survive. And as humans, we give ourselves to people, whether we are thinking about it on a conscious level or not, and then we stand back and say, okay, I just gave you that. You owe me. Pay up. What are you going to give me? You know? And then they're angry. Well, you said you were going to do this. You said you were going to do that. And this is not outside of marriage. This is inside of marital relationships, which is why I try not to put so much emphasis on marriage, because I don't want to hear, I don't want any unmarried person to get married based off of any misrepresentation that may come out of my mouth, because I do know that signing your name on a piece of paper is not spiritual. It has nothing to do with God. But what you have inside of your soul that you decide that you're going to mutually share with someone, your level of commitment to that person, your understanding and sticking to the contract. A lot of people make contracts, and I tell people when they're talking about, oh, even with my children, if they suspect that someone likes them or they like someone, I let them know. You make silent contracts with people all the time when you interact with people, but you need to make those contracts verbal. What is it that you're feeling? What is it that you're trying to get out of this? Because I can't guarantee you that I'm going to be able to give you what you're looking for. And a lot of people are hooking up physically and totally missing the spiritual blessing that they've come to teach each other. We're here on the phone because we're teaching each other something. We're learning. We're sharing. We're being intimate right now. I haven't had sex with either of you, but I feel very intimately connected. I feel warm. I'm sharing energy with you, but we know why we are here. It's very clear as to why we are here. And a lot of people get in relationships and they don't even have that basic foundation. So, Dora.
Oh, yes.
You.
Okay. I was listening to you. Great. As you said, and as well as Michael, that there is a work. And where children are concerned, as you were talking, I thought about a parent like eons ago, thank God, before there was internet and all the other devices. That's a blessing as well as bear watching. I told my sons that the day that you can have sex, I'm not telling you not to, but this is what you want to consider. In the space of, I have my name on a lease, your name, not my name, you can share your space. You know, you have your own car. I'm not driving you, because I can't be driving you and you having sex. So this is for adults. So the day that you have your name on a lease or you have your name on a deed or you have your name on a car title and you're in your own space, that's the day you can have sex. And they looked at me. That was kind of the, how I approached them about sex in a kind of a playful way. And then that's something I tell clients, before you consider sex with anyone, and I also tell children, why don't you fill you up with you?
Yeah.
Why don't you get you on your brain?
That's right.
Yeah, just fill you up with you, and then think about what will be the steps that I need to take to have a quality sex experience, not sneak a piece like the boys did in my generation. So what do you have to do? What is it that you've got to give up to take these steps toward having a quality, good sexual experience that you can share with your parents? You can even share with granny. You know, can you have that? You think about all the people in your life that you respect. And when you wake up the next morning, and thank you, Michael, because it took me back to good media with Earth, Wind, and Fire. So who came to my mind was Mae. Mae sings a song about the morning after.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who are you going to be the morning after? See, we need to think further down the road. Clarissa Estes talked about, have you looked down the road 5 years from now? What you're choosing now, how is it going to look 5 years from now? So just telling children the esoteric side of sex and then the physical side of sex. What is it that you need to have in place so you can enjoy sex? And you'll feel good to tell somebody the next day, as Michael said, you made love to love. The first person you need to make love to is yourself. You know, get in your own head, get into your feelings, and think about who you're going to be to have sex that you're pleased with and who you're going to be afterwards. Are you going to feel okay about yourself? Will you still want to speak to her? Will she still want to speak to you?
Yeah.
And do you know how not to leave a package? So if you don't want to tell anybody, don't leave any evidence. So you need to know what that is. What does that mean? What does that look like? So spiritual work is a solution, I think, for parents. And that means the parents have to take the time to know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then get to know their children. And what their temperaments are and what their interests are. And children are wise. They'll come to you and they'll ask questions if you open the door for them. And be honest with them. Just tell them. And I agree with Michael. Do not tell them that to be celibate because you know you weren't.
Right.
I had a conversation with a client and she's just ragging on her daughter about her daughter and the man. I said, look, have you shared your story with your daughter? She's 22. Where were you at 22? Did you choose wisely? She's choosing with you got about 28 years on her. Don't criticize her. And don't condone it either. Find the middle ground. Why don't you tell her a little bit about your story? You weren't quite as wise. And then I think another thing parents do with children, they go one or the other. Some parents want to be best friends. You know, they want to be best buddy.
Yeah.
You're going to lose something if you're playing best buddy because one day something is going to come up and you can't be best buddy. Now, what is the child going to do with that? We should be raising our children to live lives that are interdependent with the creator of their being, whatever that is. And that's a lot of work for parents. So children, parents should tell children, when you choose to do this, consider all the options and let me put them on the table for you. Because you need to choose wisely. You need choices. You need selections. And one selection you want to have on the table with children is when I'm talking to them. Why don't you plan to live forever? So you can put sex whenever you decide. You know, it's not today. because you're going to live a long, long, long time. You don't have to complete this in 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
Put forever on your list, and you'll enjoy your ride.
I agree with everything Dora said there, and I wanted to just add one thing that struck my mind when she said some of those things is when we're asked as leaders or parents or whatever, you know, look at how many parents are teaching their children to disrespect other men and women. For example, you're raising your boy saying you're just like your father, or you raise your girls and you say don't marry a man like your father, or the opposite. There are men out there that are raising their boys. They're raising the girls saying, you know, you look like a slut, or you look like, and they shame the women, or they look at boys. A lot of men join with their boys and they say, man, you know, yeah, you're going to get a girl like I did, and, you know, this is what guys do, and they do that buddy thing. The thing is, that programs those kids to disrespect genders, males and females. So what do we expect them to do when they do get old enough and we say we should try to talk them into, what, respecting women out there or girls out there? So when I see young boys talking about girls, and I'm thankful that I can say I'm not a saint, but I can say I wasn't really gross and rude when it came to, even when I was in my youth, I didn't talk very vulgar, and I didn't make a lot of gross actions or decisions that I would say I'm embarrassed about now. I certainly made some mistakes, but I'm very glad that I didn't go too far, and that's partly because when I did see that in older brothers or father figures or some other scenes, I was kind of going, you know, something just doesn't feel right about that. But I don't think most men and women or boys and girls are catching on to that, and I think we need to tell them to be respectful to other men and women, or in their case, even boys and girls. If parents are out there and they hear their boy or their girl talking about, you know, getting laid this weekend and using a girl, you know, and those girls think that you're in love with them, man. You've got to tell those boys, those girls think you're in love with them. If you go and take advantage of them, you're breaking their hearts and you're making some really harsh things for them happen, and it's going to kind of scar them for life. You got to respect them the way you would, you know, an angel or the most sacred of beings. It's not that they're always going to be, those other people are perfect any more than you. I mean, we all make mistakes. We're human beings. But we really need to have as much respect and honor for those people as possible. And not in a preachy way, but just really demonstrating that. And so to say it is one thing, but as parents or leaders, to teach those kids how to see those other human beings differently, because they won't abuse them as much. They won't use them as often if they're raised properly to see those. They really won't. It's very rare that if you really teach them that kind of love and respect, that they're going to go out and abuse that and do the opposite. They see it, they hear it, yes, on TV and such, but their parents as well, and then they're just going to go and act it out. So that some of these corrections have to start in the home, as we all know.
Well, what about the fact that now we're seeing a turnaround where the girls are a lot more aggressive now? And they're a lot more jaded than they used to be. They don't have the quote-unquote Prince Charming fantasy anymore. And they are now, I'm hearing more and more men complaining about finding good women. Now, we knew that this was going to happen. Well, some of us knew. I kind of knew it was going to happen because I do know that as independent as women try to be and as dominant as male-dominated as the world has been, I knew that once the woman decided that she was going to go out of the home and start working or start out-sexing the men or, you know, this whole competition started, I knew rather than equality, quote unquote, you know, and there was always this sense, again, how the world puts out something. Oh, women are beneath men and women don't have rights and women need to fight for these rights and women need to whatever. They were playing on the insecurities that had already been pre-created by society in the first place. And then they want to throw in the solution of Women's Lib, and then the media took Women's Lib and turned it into a us against them. Then the us against them turned into we're going to outdo you. And now the unity between men and women is so hard to come by. That whole fight, the whole residue of that creation is still there. So now you have this generation of girls that's coming up. And although I'm not, you know, hooked on women being, you know, domesticated, I'm not the most domesticated person in the world, but I do know how to peel potatoes and I do know how to fry an egg. And I did stay home with my kids, not because out of some self-righteous thing, but because it was just needed at the time. Okay, so now we have a sex war that seems to be taking place. I don't know if it's my imagination or what. And these girls are not trying to learn how to cook. They are not nursing their babies, which they're raising a whole group of babies who are deprived of closeness and love, and which starts the whole process of having sex very early, because nature has a way of balancing itself out. If mom is so busy trying to compete against dad, or female is so busy trying to compete against male, and male is busy trying to dominate female, then the children come out not really having a sense of, when you speak of having a sense of who you are, well, they start looking at us first before they can get a clear sense of who they are. You can't have a 2-month-old, a 6-month-old, or a 2-year-old say, and look at them and say, get in touch with yourself. You know, you can kind of guide them into growing into who they are. But when they look at us and we don't even know who we are, it's very difficult, you know, don't you think, to tell a child what's to counsel a young person. I don't want to get stuck on young people. We have adults that are stunted. And it starts from this right here. And I think this is why we go back to children in our conversation, because 40, 50, 60-year-old adults still laugh nervously when we talk about sex. They still get on the defense when we talk about submission to one another and surrendering your will to your mate, not understanding that we're not talking about surrendering your will to a fool. We're talking about a mutual surrenderance where the woman has no problem bending, the man has no problem bending, and the child can see that, and then they get a sense of who they are. Oh, it's okay for mom to make sacrifices. It's okay for dad to make sacrifices for love. It's okay for them to touch. Of course, my parents didn't touch a whole lot in public. And I think that that's another thing that needs to be addressed. Our kids need to see what healthy touching looks like. You have lots of kids who are getting bad touch, and then they look at mom and dad, and mom and dad's not touching at all. So if somebody touches the child's leg or back, they may feel uncomfortable, or they may feel, oh, wow, that's wonderful. Mom doesn't touch me. Dad doesn't. We don't hug in our family. I wish we hugged in our family. You're going to hug me? Okay, hug me. You know, that's a natural me, hugging and touching. So I know I kind of went all over the place, but I think what I'm trying to say is address the sex wars that have been instigated by a lot of movements and media, number one, and the stuntedness of sexuality and intimacy among adults, because maybe they did not see healthy touch in their family, hugs and kisses and I love yous and validations and things like that. Michael, I know that you only promised me an hour.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm going to give you a chance to say exactly where you are, where your retreats are, and seminars and things that you do. I need you to get that out, because I am interested in catching up with you and what you're doing and possibly being a part of that. One day I have a list of things that I need to do. I'm going to put you on that list.
Thank
so if you don't mind giving our listeners more detailed information about where they can reach you and how they can get in touch with you if they want to attend one of your seminars.
Well, thank you. And first, it was a pleasure sharing the space with you, Dora. Blessings
to
you.
Yes, Michael.
And yeah, you're both wonderful, and thank you for this. It was great being on the show. You're a very articulate host, so thank you for that, hon. For folks to reach me, it would be my main website is Grail, like the Holy Grail. It's Grail Web Grail Productions at AOL.com. Grail Productions at AOL.com, and that has my my itinerary and just all kinds of things that the person would need. So most anything could be gathered from there. That's got my tour itinerary of, you know, wherever I'm at in the world, but also it'll tell you my primary workshops that I do at my own retreat, which in the spring are healing workshops. In the summer I do a mastery workshop. In the fall I do a spirituality workshop. I do have one coming up over Thanksgiving week. That'll be a 5-day intensive on spirituality and developing Christ consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
All of my workshops are followed by a couple of days as well. Most of them are followed by a few days advanced trainings if for those interested in sacred sexuality or tantra, because that's been such a demand. There's just a lack of conferences anymore on that topic. So, you know, folks want sometimes to get into a training where they can learn a bit more advanced concepts and such. So that's there, and that includes, you know, breath work and kundalini yoga and all kinds of great things. But it's all, you know, pretty much on the website. People can learn more about it there. They can go on the website also to get on my mailing list and so on, and also to book private sessions. I do phone sessions, but we're fairly, you know, booked up during the year. But there are spaces allowed, you know, that we try to provide for phone sessions. And then also when I'm getting into a person's region, they can, do a session in person.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I'm just so grateful to have you in our presence. And I knew I needed to call you because I always like to make this disclaimer that the opinions of the guests are not necessarily the opinions of the host. And I'm having a hard time sticking to that with this show because I've agreed with everything that you both have said, and Dora and I are going to continue our conversation here, but I just wanted the audience to again, his website is www.grailproductions.com, and I'm looking here, and your telephone number is 360-671-8349, is that correct?
That is correct. You know, and I also want to mention one of the conferences I'm most frequently attending. It's once a year in June. It's the Universal Lightworkers Conference. So any of your listeners that might be interested in a great spiritual conference, I don't know, it seems like it's one of the only ones that are ongoing. Certainly it's one of the ones going for so long. I think they're in their, like, 15th year. But that's in Florida each June, the Universal Lightworkers Conference. And that's their website as well, universallightworkersconference.com. And they can learn more about that, but that'll cover us for now. Well, thank you, though, for having me on the show.
Okay, and share this with your group as well so that they can, you know, the people you want to get over with what you do, because you shared some really good information with us, and I'm pretty sure that there are people who probably – we're not able to hear the show that may want to hear it. So I'll send you a link after the show is over, and that way you can share that with others as well, okay?
Yes, my pleasure, hon. Thank you for having me.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye-bye, guys.
Bye-bye. Okay, Dora.
All right, Candy.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
When you go and you look, did you pull up his website?
No, I did not.
While we were talking? Okay.
No, I did not.
Yeah, he's a beautiful man. He's seems to be a very, very spiritual guy. And when I ran across him, I thought, wow, you know, I hate to seem so man-hungry, but it's that male energy that you look for, because you and I talk about this kind of stuff all the time, but when you see a male that has a similar perspective, it's very stimulating to be able to see, you know, that a male can kind of bring it in, because I think when you spend a lot of your time trying to help tame the male libido, because you're trying to make something a little more of it, this little spiritual thing, this, that, and the other, and at certain points of their lives, they're not even really thinking about that. Mm-hmm. And when you find someone that, a male that gets on that path, you know, no matter what age they are, it's refreshing to kind of talk with them and kind of invite them into your circle. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about astrology also. I noticed that you said you were moved to discuss that, and I had also run across a couple of things that I'd like to share. And I'm going to let you kind of shed some light on that influence as well.
Okay, thank you. Before I do that, I would like to kind of piggyback on the conversation we were having before Michael left, and the last thing you were saying about the gender biases and where the girls are now being more aggressive, and what the guys are saying, they're looking for a good woman, and the girls are saying, well, I'm not looking for Prince Charming, he does not exist. I do feel if we could stop, if we could put ourselves on a media fast,
amen,
and stop taking our cues from the media.
Yes, ma'am.
That it paints such a horrible picture of young men and women, men, women, boys, girls, and they take the worst that they can find, and they want to present this as a norm. They present that they got all kinds of studies and researches that they've done. And then they start advertising it, and people
right.
buy into that. So I always say, if you can take a media fast and not watch the news, not read anything that they're saying about polls and studies and how the younger women are becoming so aggressive, and there are no good women, and there are no good men, and there are no Prince Charmings out there in the world, and that is absolutely not the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Younger women, there are also women that are very aggressive, and they've always been very aggressive. We got,
mm-hmm.
We had, who was it? Who was the woman that flew the airplane? Amelia Earhart. Okay, she had to be aggressive to do this.
Right.
When we look at the movement of Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman.
That's right.
We've had these kinds of women. That's not new. We've had the women that were so in touch with their androgynous nature. So this is not new. This just is on TV. It's in the papers. It's at the checkout stands. But we need to stop that. We need to stop
what about anger?
Well, the anger
yeah.
is.
The, what about that?
The anger can be traced back to a small segment of our population.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look at the birth date. Some people just can get ticked off
mm-hmm.
for no reason at all. It is usually Aries energy. Aries energy is about competition and excitement and being the leader. I think the anger is there for some is a way of the pain of not knowing who I am. And
right.
It comes out, this is the way it has to come out. We're all born good. We're born perfect beings.
Right.
There isn't a soul on this planet that does not have the spark of divine love and divine light. So a lot of it can be looked at from an individual metaphysical point of view. And of course, I like to use astrology. I have clients who their anger is not a feeling, it's an emotion. Sadness is not a feeling. It's not a feeling, it's an emotion. And it's just out there. And if you don't have anything else that you're focused on, you internalize somebody else's stuff. There's a lot of unfinished business. And it's not just the young people. It's the people that have gone before us. They didn't do anything. So when we look in history, and we look at her story, and we look at the great women, there have been some great things that women have done on this planet, as well as men.
Mm-hmm.
So the being aggressive, being assertive, being a pioneer, you know, when I look at a woman's chart, if I see Aries, I know she's going to have to take that assertive role. Now, it may be in the negative, but her soul is calling for her not to back down and not to take no for an answer. But until we learn and we know thyself, then it's usually expressed in what we would consider unhealthy behavior. But once, because we are so inherently good, once a person sees the goodness, someone can present the goodness to them, it's there. A great movie I watched recently called The Freedom Riders.
Mm-hmm. Saw that.
That's a prime example
mm-hmm.
that this woman did not take the media and act out just like her colleagues did. She stepped out of line and made a difference.
Right.
Okay. And this is what we do when we have when we're in a position to make a difference. And the best way to make a difference is not to be needy yourself. The best way to make a difference is to complete your past.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to make a difference is stop living on memory.
Mm-hmm.
Stop living your past and get in the present.
Mm-hmm.
Deal with what is today. So I just kind of want to go back there, and the sex war is really media. You always say, well, how are we going to solve this problem? I always ask people, what comes first in your mind, the chicken or the egg? Well, you can answer that one. You'll find a solution to this problem. I think they appeared at the same time.
Right. Well, I know it's media induced, because when I meet males, they are so weary and so tired. When I talk to females, they're so tired. Everybody kind of wants to put the gun down.
Yes,
but
they do.
There is a infusion, even when you look at how the child support system plays on sexuality. A lot of it, everything that I notice that is causing confusion has always started out with a problem and then offered a solution. When we stop looking to the world to solve our personal
mm-hmm.
problems,
mm-hmm.
I think 90% of what we go through will be solved. Now, when the government got involved in child support, mind you, this also played a huge role in sexual behavior, sexuality, and the spirit of sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Men started coming up with the phrases cheaper to keeper, because the lawyers have gotten so involved in marital conflicts. The government has gotten involved in child support. And then you have women, you know, switching from having a baby to keep a man to now having a baby to get a check. And, you know, it's just all kinds of other things that have creeped in there. And I challenge a lot of couples, if you're having problems, instead of thinking about, you know, how much child support you're going to get if you leave this person, think about what the child may be losing if you break up. Think about the unit. Go back to thinking about interconnectedness and interpersonal relationships. We've gotten completely away from relating to each other, you know. Well, I found them cheating. Well, girl, how much you think you're going to get if you leave them? Well, I know my girlfriend over there is getting about $400 a month for her two children, but I got another girlfriend across town. She's getting about $900. Oh, I hope I can get that. We're not even paying any attention to the relationship anymore because, again, the movies, government, a lot of politics have come in and taken over relationships. Even if you say, well, we're married, but we're struggling, well, you can't get any type of support if you're married. So you got to have him over there and her over here, and then they're playing this whole game. A lot of politics is involved in our relationships today. And now you have the Internet, a beautiful thing, but now you have technology. People are texting each other. And we were just talking, a girlfriend of mine made a Facebook statement and said, why are people using Facebook to say the things that they need to say to people face to face, in person? You know, we need to get back to that in order to maintain this human connection, use technology, you know, use the government for a little handout, a little help, but to use these things to manipulate spirit is backfiring on a lot of intimate relationships. And when I speak of intimate relationships, I'm not just talking about sex, of course. I'm talking about friendships as well as lovership.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I really was pondering on it. I wasn't really waiting, but it's just something that I look at when I look at our kids mm-hmm. coming up, and kids always adapt, and what works for them may not necessarily be a bad thing, but again, teaching people to be comfortable with that interaction. I know I had a comment made to me. I've had comments made to me several times. When you interact with people face to face, they tell me you're so intense. You know, now my sister, Valerie, you've met her. She's very outgoing. Mm-hmm. Well, she calls, says, I'm intense. Oh, you just look right through people. Oh. And then I had my friend, he said, you know, sometimes when you look at people, they could take it as a sexual advance. And I said, what do you mean? He said, because you look so intensely. I said, I study people, and now that it's been brought to my attention, I'm not uncomfortable with sexual energy. If I meet someone and there's a sexual vibe there, I know that sexual energy doesn't mean sex.
Right.
So if you feel something, a sexual energy, for me, that's just spirit, you know, and it might wake something up, but you have to be kind of comfortable with that because I used to be very uncomfortable with that. Because I didn't want it to be misinterpreted, and I noticed even men would kind of be like, well, you know, and I've even had to go back and go, oh, no, I wasn't, you know, we were just talking. I don't know where you got that from, you know. But a very strong spiritual energy can send a mixed signal as a sexual energy, and I think this is why it's so important for people to be clear about what sexual energy is. what sexuality is, how closely tied it is to spirit. That's why you find a lot of pastors who have sex with their members. You know, that's why you find a lot of members who lust after their pastors and say, oh, God, you know, he came over here and he prayed for me, and I felt that. You didn't feel nothing but your fantasy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You felt something, but it doesn't mean that it had to be, oh, you're supposed to be having sex. You can acknowledge some type of feeling and feel comfortable with moving on, but you find a lot of adults who, again, going back to that childlike way, oh, I just felt this little butterfly, and, oh, I just think it was just meant for us to be together. I think he liked me. I don't think everybody likes me. You know, if somebody shows some type of little tiny interest in me, I think maybe I may have spiritually touched them some kind of way, but I don't automatically say, oh, he liked me, he liked me. And you have a lot of misfiring of information with people who don't necessarily understand the transference of energy. What do you have to say about that?
Oh, my. We're always sending. See, this is when we get to the real deal of the reason for the season. And I always say there are some basics. And if the basics have not been covered, well, you know what you're going to have. Your building is shaky. When we get to who we really, really are and what we are being and why we are here, we get to the basics. Everything is spirit. And then the human element plays on from each of us what that may look like. I could be sending out, just a casual greeting. Hello, how are you? If the person that is standing as I send this out and have not mastered a certain level, that they live below the belt. And some people, whole life is determined below the belt. They don't come from the heart. They're really not conscious of the inner workings of their mind. They stay in the first two levels, sex and survival.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is the development, then everything that comes across, everything that comes their way, that's how they're going to interpret it. It doesn't have that much to do with the sender as it does the person who is standing there. It's like the car, it's like the train coming by. A person that does not know what a train is, they walk, they just say it's a moving vehicle. But somebody may have an experience, may know what that is and who's on it and where it may be going. So when we get the basics, see, I always say we get the basics. The first basic is to fill yourself up with love. If you don't know what that means and you don't know how to do that, pray. Everybody know how to pray. Praying is this. Whatever you call God or whatever you don't call God or whatever, just say, I need some understanding. Help me. Direct me. It doesn't take a lot. Just direct me. I want to know me. That may mean that you read a book. It may mean you sit and just stare out in space. You know, it just depends on you and how it works for you. You know, this thing really is very, very simple. Even sex is simple. We just make everything so complicated because so much sales. Everything is back to selling. You know, like baby for child support. Man doesn't mind because he wants someone to control. You know, it's all back into I'm not filled up with me. See, when
right.
I get filled up with me, I have something to share, and I'm not needy. See, I'm not needy. I'm not existing outside of myself. I'm complete with myself. So we look at, I keep going back to the mainstream media. See, if the mainstream media had GrailProductions.com, if he had
right.
a commercial, and he could say, if Michael could have had a commercial and that went to mainstream media, if InspirationSchools.com had a commercial on CNN, ABC, CBS, see what I'm saying? If we had commercials on the cable shows, if your single mama diva was on the cable shows, if it was on Terrain Radio,
right.
the people would follow it. See, that's why I said take a media fast. I keep saying this. Give yourself 1 week and come off. Just don't listen to the news. Don't read about nothing going on in the White House unless you live in the White House. Because you don't know what's going on in the White House.
We have a call on.
Oh, we do have a call. Okay.
Uh-huh. So we're going to let you speak, caller. Go ahead.
Good evening, ladies. This is Neil. Hey, Dora. How are you?
Hi, Neil. How are you?
How are you, single mama diva?
I'm doing great.
Yeah,
great.
I love that name. When Dora sent me the email, I had to check in to hear what this was going to be all about.
Yeah, Neil, we are exploring and talking and sharing, and we would love to hear what you have to say.
Well, I have a lot of stuff to say. You'd probably have to ask me some questions, but I did hear something that I found was very interesting, because I've only been on maybe about 10 or 15 minutes now, but the whole eye contact thing. You know, I find that to be, you know, very interesting, because I think, you know, you're right. Men definitely take women staring them in their eyes the wrong way the majority of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've just become a culture of not looking people straight in the eye. And so I think when people do that with each other, you know, particularly when it's a male-female exchange, the man is going to kind of maybe think about, does he have a chance with that person? But I think you're absolutely correct. It doesn't mean anything necessarily. You're just feeling an energy that's transpiring at that time. But my question for you is, you know, how would you define the difference between sexual energy and just a person having an air of power or charisma or swagger? How do you define the difference between it being sexual energy versus those other two things?
I really don't see a difference. I think that for me, I think that, number one, you have two players or many players in this communication game. You have the person that is initiating the communicating, and you have the person that's interpreting the communication. So I think, of course, you have to leave the perception up to the individual and just kind of be you. But I was listening to Wanda Sykes when she was talking about Barack Obama and Michelle, and when she was saying, she said, I've been in their presence, and you can feel the energy. She said, there's some doing it going on in the White House. You can feel the energy. She said, they are definitely active, you know, and everybody fell out laughing and things like that. But I thought about the show and thought about people can feel that energy. That same charisma is what drew people to Charles Manson. That same charisma is what drew people to Jim Jones. They all use their sexual energy and their charisma. I actually don't really separate the two. But now when you're talking about how it's used and how people interpret it, okay, I've heard a lot of women say that when they've seen President Obama, Bill Clinton, Ted Kennedy, all of our sexy quote-unquote presidents, when they've seen them, they immediately felt a sexual energy there. Well, on the television, you may call it charisma. I think it depends on the context in which you kind of look at it, because a lot of people find power sexy. So I kind of think it's interchangeable, you know, whether that person's intentionally trying to be sexy, because we've used that term even in class before, where you have someone who's teaching a subject, and the teacher will say, this particular issue right here is very sexy, meaning that it's very interesting, it's very enticing. We want to talk about this topic. We want to and open this topic up because it's a very attractive topic. And, oh, we got a sexy topic today. Well, what's the topic on? Well, the topic is going to be talking about politics and gender. And we're like, whoa, you know, we're so excited. So sometimes I think that sexual energy, sexiness, and all of this that we're talking about it's kind of wrapped up in a Madrid of things. How do you feel about that, Dora?
Oh, I feel that it depends on the view. The, like I say, there's always two things going on, and then there's a third thing. It depends on the players and where they
right.
are, where they are consciously. Because, like I said, most people live below the navel, and if you living below the navel, your whole interpretation of your world is based on two things: sex and survival.
But what about you, Dora? I live in my head. And things that are intellectual to me are sexy, you know?
No, but you don't see it as a need to react.
No,
I
definitely don't.
A hidden agenda or responding to it. See, when I say sex and survival, we're talking about beings that they don't ever, their heads are used to play the game.
Right.
There's a, when you say you live in your head, nobody truly just live in their heads.
Well, when I say head,
I'll
say my androgynous zone is in my brain. So if I'm having a conversation with someone, something may be, what's sexy or attractive to someone else may not be sexy or attractive to, you know, if you can help me work out an equation, I might say, you know, wow, you know, that's real sexy. But it, I think sex appeal, it wouldn't that be kind of different? For some people have interpreted above the waist and some people below the waist. Or are you just saying that in how they act it out?
We're talking about a consciousness. We're not necessarily just looking at the physical, because you got to get past, see, what the eyes see. The eyes see very little. It's what the brain knows.
Right.
If the brain only knows survival and sex, and it's through the anatomy only, it's nothing about spirituality and sex being the same. He said,
right.
This is all I've told myself. He goes, hey, why don't we do something today? We got Neil on the line, so we're gonna look at his chart and see what his sexuality is.
Don't get me in trouble out here, Dora.
Hold on 1 minute. We have one more caller.
Okay.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello. Listen to the conversation. My name is Glenn from Chicago.
Hi, Glenn.
Hey, hello. How you doing?
Fine.
I'm listening to your conversation, which is a pretty interesting conversation. But I'm listening to you. Your name is Mama Diva?
Mm-hmm.
Correct? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm listening to your conversation, and it's going through a lot of sexual stratosphere from my point of view. Because... Mm. What I think, to shorten the conversation is, I think this manufactured system that is among everybody's lives is quite overwhelming to most people. And I think a lot of people lose their identity, and what they don't understand, which is most important, is oneself.
Mm-hmm.
And one strength of inner strength. It doesn't matter what someone else thinks about you and how sexual you feel. I don't think it's about no sexuality of any
Mm-mm.
sort. I think it's about you as an individual. And if you don't continue to study oneself and the relationship of your surroundings, your environment, of what's happening with this epic of time in which you're living in, I think you're going to get lost. So I
right.
think it's a lot of wasted conversation about sexuality, about all of that. What it really boils down to is, who are you? And who are you related to yourself and to the inner world of yourself? So
Were you on our first hour? You heard our first hour?
Well, I've heard the most of the time.
Okay, because that's what we talked about the whole first hour. We did all that already. where we were talking about how you have to know yourself, you have to love yourself, you have to fill yourself up with self before you can share yourself with other people. This part of our conversation is more about just kind of letting it all hang out and everybody saying what it is that they feel. Neil asked the question about the difference between charisma and sexuality. So
I heard Neil.
Right.
I heard Neil,
yeah.
And it's quite interesting what he had mentioned. He was saying, well, actually he was saying, if he can correct me if I'm wrong, he was saying if a woman looks into your eyes, does that mean that there's attraction? But not necessarily so. I mean, I
exactly.
look into a lot of people's eyes, and I might be studying the appearance of the person or the physique of the person, because you can do a lot of studying of people's movement and all, and you can almost it'll come to you, you know, on a more higher level, you know. So I think most people are confused nowadays. I think they're confused
yeah.
who they are. They don't know who they are.
That's what Laura was saying when she was saying taking a media fast from the media and getting in touch with
yeah.
you.
And
is that what you were saying, Laura?
Yeah.
That's exactly
right.
what I'm saying, is to take a break, step outside, you know, turn the TV off, so even stop going on some sites on the Internet. Come back to yourself. Take a media, because it's really not that kind of party that most people try to make it be, that kind of party. But
right.
the media will paint that picture. Like I said, if Blake.com was in the mainstream media, Inspiration Scoop in the mainstream media, Single Mama Diva, Grail Production, then we would have something else to look at. But most people are taking their cue from the media, and the media is there for one thing. And Neil knows what that is. That is the sale. It's more about advertising, and they find out what sales, and right now sex sales. But if those of us that are aware, if we stop shipping and buying, if we stop selling it, you know, why don't we just stop selling it?
And
just
you
stop
getting
talking
pimped
about
too.
It. Stop doing
so,
what?
So
you stop getting pimped because it's nonsense. It's total nonsense. And the average person is always trying to connect with this nonsense, and they don't understand that this nonsense has nothing to do with them. It has nothing to do with you. I think the most important thing for the average person, the human being, is to get in oneself. And that's all you're for. That's all you're here for, is to go to your higher consciousness. That's all. That's all you are here for, is going to the higher consciousness and accept one own being. Because once you understand that, everything else would open up to you just like a light. You know, everything will open up for you. So people are very confused, and I see it every day. And I don't know if it angers me, saddens me, or I get disappointed.
All of the above.
Yeah, and I mean, people are really.
You guys are Aquarius.
I mean, people
right.
are very. Well, Dory knows my sign, but.
I've talked to Glenn. I've talked to Glenn.
You've talked to Glenn.
Yeah.
Glenn likes, he loves humanity. It's the people he can't stand, right, Glenn?
Right.
That's Aquarius.
Right.
But what about this, guys? We only have 12 minutes left, and this is to everybody on here, because being that technology, going back to that, is a very, very good invention, I am a human contact person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a people person where I just like to be around a whole lot of people all the time, but I like for my interactions with people to be meaningful. I'm not really into just numbers. I'm into meaning more so than anything else, and sharing and affecting each other on a positive level. Now, when we talk about looking into the eyes of people and going back to the president, I know that when people said that they met Bill, Bill never forgot a name. Hi, Dora, how are you? I remember you had a child that was in the hospital the last time I was here. How's that child doing? You know, hi, Neil, I remember that you had this radio station, and, you know, I remember this, and I remember this about you, and facts and things. And we don't really get that a lot. I think that makes individuals starved for this attention. When, and then what is charisma is then, like I said, perceived as a sexual thing. Oh, he touched my hand. Oh, he remembered my name. Oh, he remembered the child I told him about. Oh, he remembers that I'm in radio or whatever. And these are things that it's just common human decency that we're turning into something more than what it is. Now, how do we overcome that? More human contact, more genuineness, more I love you, Glenn. Oh, I love you, Dora. Oh, Neil, I just love you. Do we? And I'm not speaking of being fake. I'm speaking of being real. Are we really expressing our love and our energy in a way that makes people not so starved, or as Glenn says, not misinterpret and become confused by things that are just humane, rather?
The only way in which you can solve that problem that you're asking for most humans is for most humans to be true to themselves. And most humans are actually afraid of looking in the mirror and looking at themselves, even in the mirror. They're afraid of it. And that's the only way in which you're going to get to your true inner being and true self is by being true to yourself.
Right. So if I'm being true to myself, or if Dora's being true to herself, and she's telling you, Glenn, or looking at you and saying, oh, Glenn, I just love you. You're just so special. Or she touches your hand, and you misinterpret that as a sexual come on because you haven't gotten there yet. You still operating somewhere else. And Dora's being a wonderful sister. If you misinterpret that, what responsibility do to whom much is given, much is required? Because some people are made to feel guilty for having that gift of being able to share humane touch and feelings and things, and people misinterpreting that. Where does that responsibility begin and end if you can't handle that?
Well, that's a genetic defect. Defect in most. I'm not trying to be funny now.
I hear you.
Yeah, that's a genetic defect in most humans when they have that sort of a problem. If you can't differentiate, distinguish between the difference, that to me is a genetic defect. And I'm sorry to say that, and I'm not trying to be funny. I'm trying to be as serious as I possibly can about that because I see this every day in human beings, and they really have a serious problem within themselves. You know, you got people just come up to other people and don't like them and don't even know them, you know. And
right.
I think that that's a problem. That's a problem within another person's being. And either they're ignorant to the fact of such defect in their genetic system that they can't distinguish from. It's really a saddening fact, you know, to really see this, and I see it every day. So.
Okay, Glenn, hold 1 second. Caller, you're on the air. We only got about 5 minutes. 916, did you want to say something?
You know what? I pressed the button by accident, and I apologize.
Well, there's no accident.
Neil had me laughing, so.
Well, the thing is, I asked that question simply because I think that, you know, I just wanted to see what your take was on it because I think people naturally flirt with each other, and personally, I don't think there's anything wrong with it.
I think that...
You know, we're powerful sexual beings, and, you know, I agree with what you're saying is that, you know, I can flirt, and I'm putting words in your mouth, but I can flirt with you, I can throw my sexual energy at you, but it doesn't mean that I want to follow up with it. And,
right.
And there's nothing wrong with, you know, life is about giving and receiving. And if that's one way that you can give somebody something by bringing a smile to their face, I think it's a beautiful thing. It doesn't mean that you want to go to bed with them.
Right.
But I think that, you know, all of us have different levels of energy that we are able to mm-hmm. disseminate out into the public. So I think that if you carry with yourself a certain amount of sexuality or charisma or swagger, and you can share that by looking in someone's eyes or simply telling somebody, you know, you look good today, it doesn't mean that you want to sleep with them.
Exactly.
And Neil, I really agree with that. I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
You know, I have an uncle.
Well, me myself, I'm a big flirt. I flirt all the time.
And it's cool to flirt, I think. You know, the problem is that we run into
but
people who take it the wrong way.
It. Yeah.
Right.
And that's,
see, I know
I
who to flirt with.
Right.
You got to know who
to
flirt with.
And
because I think there is a level of responsibility.
Yes,
right.
I agree with you, Dora. There's
it
a
is
level
a level of responsibility.
Response,
I wouldn't throw that at a young kid. You know, it's got to be, you see what I'm saying? I wouldn't find myself flirting at a kid. So I'm conscious enough, you know, I'm 61. So I've been around the block several times. I know who I'm flirting with, and I know who not to flirt with.
And
I know
also,
how far to go.
Right.
And also, Dora, it's good to flirt, you have to have, you have to know yourself and feel confident in yourself that you can deal with this, because a lot of people misinterpret flirtation because they can't deal with it because they don't feel comfortable within themselves.
Well, I would flirt with someone I didn't think could handle it.
Right.
Can you handle it, Glenn? If I
I could handle it. Oh, yes, I could handle it.
Bring
it on.
Can you handle it?
Bring it on.
Let's be clear. Let's be clear.
I think the Aquarian
nature
is taking over the show.
We're here.
Here.
All of them got it today.
Yeah, my moon is in Aquarius, so I have the ability to kind of detach and still be pleasant to other people, and they have misinterpreted that. And, you know, I haven't had any bad repercussions, but I've been pulled to the side by my mate a couple of times, mates. They say, did you realize how that person was looking at you? And I'm like, no, not really. I mean, I was aware that there was something, but that doesn't make me uncomfortable. You know, if it makes you uncomfortable, we can talk about you, but I'm not uncomfortable with that, you know. So I think everyone's level of comfort see is a little bit different. And on the next show, which you guys are welcome to call in, we're going to talk about how to destroy the spirit of manipulation through sex.
Wow.
Whole 90 minutes geared toward how we manipulate each other. We're not talking about just flirting. We're not talking about just innocent, you know, play here. We're talking about some serious manipulation that people are engaging in now. Because, like Glenn said, people don't know themselves. People are afraid of being rejected. People are afraid of not getting their needs met. I don't think Glenn can meet my needs, so I'm going to go over here and I'm going to manipulate Glenn and make sure that he's going to give me that affection and make sure that Neil is going to pay my bills and get my car fixed so I can get back and forth to work. Make sure that Neil pays his child support. I'm going to manipulate him, you know. And then the men are manipulating the women. Oh, God, she wants to marry me. I don't want to marry her, but I'll take her looking at rings so I can go head on and get some, you know, sex or whatever it is that each person wants. So we're going to explore that, and that's going to be an open conversation. And I want many men and women to kind of call in about that, so we can kind of discuss it.
So well, I always say one thing. It's always you always expend a lot less energy by giving than denying, and I'll just leave it at that.
True, true, true.
Very good, very good.
I agree.
And I say you expend a lot less energy by being upfront with what you can give and what you can't give. You know, a lot of us can't give certain things. And I want to tell you up front, Dora, I can't give you that. Mm-hmm. so that you don't even have to try to manipulate that out of me. I don't have, that's not my gift. I'm not good at that. And so, you know, sometimes just being honest, like Glenn said, with who you are, that's not who I am. Rather than coming to each other playing this role like we can actually provide something that we can't provide. So I've enjoyed it. I really hate that Glenn and Neil, you guys came on a little bit later than what I would have liked, because I always like to hear your input, both of you, on the show. So we're going to have to end the show, and I'm going to have to tell all of you bye and thank you, and I love sharing with you. And I want to hear you guys on the next show as well, okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks everybody for listening.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.